GAA podcast on RTE.ie, sponsored by Optimum Nutrition. No matter your goal, if you're putting it in, we'll help you get more out. Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the Gaelic Players Association.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello everyone and welcome along to our latest episode of the RTE GAA podcast. Myself and Rory joined this week by Enda McGinley and Michael Foley of the Sunday Times. Hope you're well, lads. You're going to be busy because we've got 32 games across Championship football this weekend. 8 in the Sam Maguire, 8 in the Talton Cup. Let's get straight into the Sam Maguire and start in Group 1, because I think even when you look at it, what you had last week, two great games, Galway and Armagh now on 2 points after wins against Derry and Westmeath. And it feels now this Derry and Armagh game this weekend is the biggest game of the weekend for so many reasons. A massive opportunity for both teams, but I think particularly Derry, given the season that they're having after the way that the league has gone.
Yeah, absolutely huge one. Like, rewind the clock to the end of the league final, and what odds would you have got that Derry in their next two games would lose by 6 and 5 points respectively?
Like, absolutely.
You would have never thought that that was what was coming down the track, and yet that is exactly what has hit them, and they are a camp reeling at the minute. They've obviously the injury crisis that they've been hit at the wrong time of the year is a major thing. McInnes is sent off, and just that general sense of a team fraying around the edges and having pushed themselves so hard, are they able to recircle the wagons and relaunch this thing whenever that huge wave of sort of momentum and that wave of belief that was being created, and you could just sense that from them, has crashed? Can they get that up and going again? So it's a massive, massive, massive challenge for Derry. And Armagh will smell blood. Like, without a doubt, Armagh are coming in. The Ulster final defeat was gutting for them, no doubt. And that lingering sense that they cannot get over the line in big games, or certainly finals anyway. But this is their chance to do just that against a weakened opponent, and one that they know last year when Derry were at their pump, they took to penalties in extra time in Clonus. So Armagh should have confidence, but again, that confidence is going to be a wee bit thin. So it'll be like two fighters trying to almost out-bluff each other and try to re-establish that bit of momentum. But for whoever doesn't get momentum out of this at the weekend, you would really think their season isn't going to end well.
Mm. There are two fighters who've taken a fierce amount of punishment though, Mick, in a very, you know, like that Ulster Championship, what it must have taken out of both of these teams in different ways. I think Enda's right. Whoever comes out of this one, the confidence that they're going to take out of it will be massive.
Yeah, the fighter analogy is good. It's like you'd be afraid whichever one gets punched first, they could go down fast, you know, depending on how hard they get punched. It really could. I mean, this could be a blow-off either way. But like, the Derry thing, I mean, in a way, it was weird, like, coming into the Ulster Championship, there was so much kind of conversation around, well, would Derry be better off out of the Ulster Championship, you know? And you're kind of, suddenly you're in the sphere of trying to, I'm sure, obviously, Derry weren't of that mindset. You could see, obviously, it goes without saying, but all of a sudden, you're almost managing the notion of defeat before you even lose, and kind of going, okay, we lost to Donegal. The nature of the performance was so poor that it was very hard to manage that. And then, as Enda mentioned, I mean, the injury since and stuff. I mean, they looked a wreck against Galway by the end. I mean, just, you know, everything about them looked like it was coming apart. Quite apart from the Garrett McInnes incident with Damian Comer, even by the end of the game, the discipline was gone out the window. There was one player, one fella just swung a punch at a guy into the ribs, like with about a minute or two to go, completely out of character. But it kind of said to me, all right, this team now, there's either one or two things going on here. They're either exhausted and they're just demoralized now by what's happened in the last couple of games, or else they've lost faith in the project. One or the other has happened here, and they need, you know, the only way to get faith back in these things and stop questioning yourself, what you're at and what's going on around you, is to get a victory. And, you know, for both teams, it's kind of sitting up for them. Like, if Derry were to beat Armagh with all, with, you know, with the history they've had the last couple of years, like Enda says, it would represent the getting it back on the tracks. If they don't, I mean, if Derry are already not All-Ireland contenders, they certainly won't be if they don't win this particular game. And from the Armagh perspective, like, you know, like I'd be looking at it going, well, Ulster Championship was their most realistic prospect of a trophy, which is really what they would have been wanting. So what's left in the season now? Like, are they going to win an All-Ireland? Very unlikely. So, I mean, really, the biggest thing in their year is to win this game, because it's Derry. It's a winnable match. It's a game that gets them back on the road. And who knows? I do think, like, that Armagh are well capable of getting to the last four. I just can't see them winning an All-Ireland. But, you know, it's at
But if they were to win this weekend, though, Mick, would that change your mind? Because if Derry are one of the contenders and they beat them, then why not?
Well, they're not, like. I mean, I don't think Derry are a contender, really.
Okay.
I mean, you really boil it down for this particular... I mean, yes, they had an excellent league. I was one of the people that would have been concerned that they were going too hard at the league. And, like, I think there was... Sometimes when you were looking at it, you were thinking, is Mickey Hart kind of thinking more Toronto 3 here rather than Derry 24? Like, Derry 24 had an awful lot more mileage on the road than Enda's generation when they were going for everything in 2003. But look, it's easy.
And the season was much tighter then, too.
You
won your Ulster Championship and you went straight into the quarterfinal.
That's a big
and I think teams are, and we've spoke about this last year, but teams are still very much learning how to go at this season. We've seen, like, the league champions 2 years in a row went out in the first round and their season really is damaged from that. So, and then again, the provincial championships, obviously the inequality in them, given the competitive nature and what teams have to go through, that all has to be factored. And I think teams are still at sea in terms of how to time this. Kerry have tried a different approach this year. They're very much building. And the wisdom only comes after the event. And you can't judge on N1 or N2. You need multiple years before we start getting ways to what suits various teams. And each team is in a different path. If it's their first year, second year, if they have a young team, and it's all so different. So the bets are off. Just for me, I suppose, with Derry and Mickey, after that Donegal defeat, for those weeks coming into that Galway game, they would have been ramping up. And that game would have been built up to such a moment in that camp, for that to fall flat as badly as it did. Suddenly then he's trying to do the exact same thing for now Armagh, but that's a really difficult thing psychologically to try and pull off the same trick that you tried to pull off just previously and it didn't work. And for the first time in many years, Derry are now within their own county hearing lots of disquiet about what's going on within the county setup. So
Can I just ask a question about that, though, Enda, right? What is that based on? Because look what they've done over the last number of years. They have silverware to show for it. Like, you know, in a way, how much more can a county ask for having where they have come from? You know, I find it mad that all the doubts are suddenly there. We were talking about them as All-Ireland contenders. Like, there's no way we would have been having those conversations 2 years ago.
Jackie, we're Irish. We give out stuff. We want to give out about stuff. So when things are going well, it's great, but it's almost an uneasy thing whenever things are going well. We are much better when things are falling off the wagon, and then we can start talking and gossiping.
We love misery. We love
absolutely. So look, that bit, whenever you've had it so good for so long, then they're looking at the change in management and that Tyrone thing and all of that. And the Tyrone people are sort of using the old agent Mickey line, and all of those things are going on in the background. Of course, a load of rubbish and doesn't impact the actual circle, or shouldn't impact the circle, but it does just in the background. That background noise, every team comes out and says, oh, we don't listen to Tannen, we don't listen to that. But they'll also come out and say, well, people were writing us off. So the background noise is there. It is very much there for both of these teams. Armagh's got questions, Derry got questions. It's set up for a brilliant tie, I think.
Well, here's the other reality for Derry as well, that I think people maybe took to, coming back to a more practical thing. And you know, it's very easy in hindsight to be wise about all of these things and timing your season and what you do and all that. I totally appreciate that. But I do think that people got a bit ahead of themselves in terms of the depth in that squad. Like, it's definitely better than it was last year, right? But this is a slow, evolving... Derry are not the type of county that are going to come and win an All-Ireland of a shot. They're just not. Historically, every which way, they won't. Like, so it's taking time. So even in the context of the last couple few weeks where they have an injury crisis, the lads that are coming in just are not good enough. Like, I had huge sympathy for them having to break up Conor Glass and Brendan Rodgers in the previous game. Now, my own feeling on it was you just don't do that. Like, they are the engine of the whole thing. You surely have utility players that can fill out a half back line and keep that engine together and drive it on. But they didn't. They went another way and they moved Rodgers out. So be that as it may. But the point I'm making is that there's a far more kind of prosaic, kind of practical aspect here going on, that the competition within the squad still isn't strong enough to win in All-Ireland. They're not pushing. They're lads. There's probably still a good chunk there who know they're going to be picked in the first 15 if they're fit. But that's changing and it'll come. But I think, you know, as long as the wheels don't go completely flying off this year, they're going to be contenders again next year. And I mean, they're still the last four potential this year, by the way. It's just those fine percentage points. It's just those fine percentage points we're talking about All-Ireland winners. We're not talking about teams now making the last four. We're talking about Derry in the context of winning an All-Ireland. And those fine percentage points, they're short at this year.
Mm. Go on, sorry, Enda.
The belief factor is so important. But going back to the squad depth thing, you take four or five starters out of any team in the country.
Oh, yeah. You're good.
Possibly with the exception of Dublin, but even they'll be stretched. Yeah. You remove a Foley or a White from Kerry. You remove a couple of players from Donegal. Every team, and it's credit to our top county players, they are something else. And when you dig down below number 20 in any panel, you've got players just starting to make their way. And the difference is significant whenever you're up against other top teams.
Mm. Just, I think, Rory, psychologically this weekend, it's not about Derry winning an All-Ireland. It's actually about getting back on the horse. Like, three defeats is nearly inconceivable that we would have, you know, Enda's right, that we would, there's just no way, given the league that they had, the way that they were being put up on that platform. If they win again this weekend, they're getting out of the group. Yeah, it's going to change the seeding, but they were a third seed in this group anyway. I actually don't think anything drastic is going to change. It's just psychologically what this Derry group can get out of a victory this weekend.
Will be important to get a win. It will be important, to play well and to try and dispel some of the negativity that the lads spoke about there. They're not racking up big. No, I know they scored 17 points. Still, people may argue Shane McGuigan, is there an over-dependency? He's only scored 8 points in the championship, half of which were from dead balls. So they are spreading the scoring around a little bit more. I think the issue for them on Sunday is they're going to be at home. And there's going to be an expectant home crowd to try and see for the first time. Like obviously we saw what happened against Donegal in the first game. But I think they'll be under a little bit of pressure. It's hard to figure out who's under the most pressure. Okay. I think the fact that Armagh are playing their fifth championship match, I think that should stand to them to a certain extent. Despite maybe any wear and tear, there's no major injuries, maybe except from Rian O'Neill's perspective. We don't know what's happening there. I don't know. Is he fit? Is Rian O'Neill going to play? Do we know, lads?
Not sure.
No one knows. Yeah, so they do keep those cards close. But look, it's a real, real 50-50 game. I mean, the last time they met was the Ulster final last year. And it took penalties to sort it out. I wouldn't be surprised to see something similar this time around, as in, you know, look, this obviously doesn't go to extra time penalties, but this will be tight.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe tighter than the other games, but let's look at them anyway, as that is our job to do, lads. They can't all be thrillers, that's for sure. Group two, Dublin and Mayo both on 2 points after wins against Roscommon and Cavan. I think Roscommon-Mayo this weekend, Enda, it's the third meeting, but it seems even reading Lee Keegan's column today, there's a nervousness in Mayo. You know, they've already beaten them twice this year and it should be this will be grand. But I don't know, there's an edginess around Mayo this year that I can't quite put my finger on. And he articulated it really well, really good column, just saying he's just not sure where the confidence levels are in Mayo.
Yeah, I think the fact that they had a iffier league campaign, and obviously that was okay, they're not going flat out for the league. Then they obviously got past Roscommon, but it wasn't a convincing win in that game. Then lost the Connacht final, which was probably a bit of a surprise against Galway. Galway really done a job on them that day, and yet going into injury time, they were of course 2 points up. And it's amazing the fine lines how things change. Their performance against Cavan, the asterisk is Cavan were without Paddy Lynch, and that just makes such a dramatic difference. But it was quite a flat performance. But with that, it is difficult for teams to be up at a certain peak all the time. I think it's just the fact that it's Roscommon again. They played them in last year's championship, played them a couple of times this year. There's a lot of familiarity there. And it's just, God, we're going back to this again. Are we going to see anything new? They're not quite sure where the team is. Paddy Durkin's injury is a massive impact just psychologically on everybody. There, for me, there's questions over Roscommon too. You're sort of waiting for Roscommon to get going for a good part of the Dublin game. They were decent, and then they fell away badly at the end. But I think they have a real chance. I thought they had a chance in the first round whenever they met Mayo. Their dominance in terms of Mayo on long kickouts is really, really significant. They bossed them in the 23 championship match, which they won. They bossed it this year's game, but they didn't push up hard enough on it often enough. I think they only sort of pushed up off dead balls, that sort of situation. But they dominated when it went long. Galway, the last day out against Mayo, got 5 points from long kickouts. Mayo didn't score at all from long kickouts. Galway once again dominated from long kickouts. So from a Roscommon point of view, they have a definite avenue in there to try and get a bit of dominance in the game. For Mayo, there's just lots of questions. And again, it feels like Kerry pre their last game. I think Kerry definitely did up it and showed a half of real potential against, yes, Monaghan were off colour. But I thought Kerry, everybody's wondering, where are they? I thought they really put in a very impressive, serious half of football against Monaghan. Mayo were still waiting for that.
I don't know what answers that question, because a game against Roscommon, even if they win this weekend, I think those questions would probably still hang there, Michael, you know?
Yeah, they will, yeah. Like, I mean, they're in between that kind of place between, you know, when they were All-Ireland finalists, serious contenders, and just trying to kind of evolve the thing as they go along. So, yeah, like, I mean, I mean, they were very comfortable against Roscommon, really, this year when they played them in Connacht overall. I mean, they're kind of, as I recall, I think their pace in the end really did for Roscommon. Like, Mayo's just, you know, they cut through them in the second half quite comfortably. I was not impressed with the way they managed out the Galway game at all. Like, you know, End is correct. Like, that Galway certainly deserved the win, but I mean, Mayo were in a position to win the thing and they didn't look comfortable against Cavan. Yeah, it's kind of that in between, you know. I get the sense in Mayo that the expectation and the vibe in Mayo is not the same as it was even 3 years ago, 4 years ago. That's not to say that they're patient, but they're not expecting fireworks. But yeah. The fact is, I mean, there was common Mayo rivalry is funny as well. Like, for people down the country and east, like, it's a far more hateful rivalry than Galway Mayo, for example. There's an awful lot more of an edge to Roscommon Mayo. They don't like each other, by and large, when they meet. So, could be cranky. I wonder, you know, based on what Endon was saying there, the point he made there about Roscommon's dominance in the long kickouts, I wonder, are we going to see two teams sitting back a little bit, you know, and kind of mirroring each other a bit? And it could be a bit of a grind, this one. I know you were saying they can't all be classics, Jackie, but it'd be nice if some of them were half decent.
You don't think this one will be then, by all accounts?
Well, do you know what? What do I know? I mean, it could be, you know, I say it'd be a grinder. No, it'll probably be a 4-21-3
classic,
and hopefully that's the way
it won't be that, Mick.
Yeah. I tell you this much about Roscommon. I did like the way, like, they managed what they could manage against Dublin very well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
four wides, so, yeah, is very impressive. Their inside forward line did much of the scoring. They did well. They kept Dublin out of the scoring zone for long stretches. Okay, they got burned in the last 10, 15 minutes. What are you going to do? Like, they did as well as they could do within the structure that they set up. And I'm sure they'll come. I mean, they are definitely better now than they were when they met Mayo first time round. Mm-hmm. And are Mayo better than when they met the Rossies the first time? That's, you know, as we're kind of saying here, that's kind of, that's the question, you know?
Mm. Yeah, like the Roscommon, that first game I was doing the evening show, and we were picked out because Roscommon's shooting was atrocious against Mayo that first day, and we had all the clips sort of there. And it took us quite a while to filter it down to the worst misses, because it was so bad. Whereas now against Dublin, like, Roscommon, definitely there's boys there hitting form. They hit some really, really nice scores against Dublin. So I honestly think there's a decent chance here for Roscommon, because I think Mayo's confidence isn't fully there. Mayo aren't fully into gear. It's just that query where the Roscommon project is under Davy Burke. Is there a gradual air seeping out of that tyre? Or can they gather something? This match is critical for that particular project as well, I think.
I think though, Rory, they should take confidence. Yeah, like the lads are right. They did get blown out of it in the last 15 minutes. But for most of the game, they had good, solid structures. They look like they've improved significantly. And actually, this is a very different game than the Dublin game is. It should feel a bit more open and they should get more of the ball. And I don't know. I think they should feel a bit more confident, like as Mick said, than the previous time they played Mayo, where they were cut open. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I think you mentioned something there in terms of getting more possession, getting more of the ball. I think they will. Mm. And that will give them a platform, certainly anyway, to, you know, establish some level of a foothold in the game. Big issue for them, 13 points against Mayo in that Connacht semi-final and 13 points against Dublin. So that seems to be their threshold. And it's the same three. It's Craig, Murta and Conor Cox the last day. So it's your inside line. So if you're Kevin McStay, and you've seen this now as a pattern, you just probably drop everybody a half a line deeper. You completely snuff out that.
You're
inside.
Not selling a classic, Rory.
Well, you snuff out that inside forward line. And do you really think Roscommon will have the ability to rack up a big enough score, given, in fairness to the Mayo inside line, Ryan O'Donoghue is playing really well. Tommy Conroy is starting to motor.
And Killian is back now.
Whether he starts, they don't seem to like Killian and Aidan on the pitch at the same time for some reason. But look, I just think there's too many strings to Mayo's armory. There's too many weapons in there for them not to get the job done and set up a winner takes all against Dublin, which would have us all intrigued, to be fair.
Yeah, in Croke Park.
Don't mention the war.
Stop. All right, group three then. Donegal and Cork both on 2 points after wins against Tyrone and Clare. Cork Donegal is really interesting this weekend. And I think, Enda, even the idea of all these games, you know, we joke about Croke Park there, but you're looking at 11,000 people in Croke Park. It's like crazy. Whereas this game in Páirc Uaireanga, it's about 16,000 capacity, completely different scenario than if it was in Páirc Uaireanga. And I think that does, I'm not saying that it changes the game, but it definitely changes the atmosphere. It'll bring an old school championship vibe to this game, and Donegal going all the way down to Cork. It's certainly not an easy trip for a team who are definitely one of the big contenders.
And wait, let's see the dressing rooms, Jackie.
Old school.
Yeah, old school.
Yeah, my memory of Páirc Uaireanga, Mickey Hart, any day, God rest him, it was in the times after Cormac and Allen obviously passed away, and he seen me as a potential fullback project. I went well in my first game, and then down to Páirc Uaireanga was my second game. At halftime, that project ended. and I'd never seen the light again. So Páirc Uaireanga always brings back fond memories of getting thoroughly lost, chasing after Kavanagh. But anyway, no small tight. Is it a small ground? It's one of those.
It is.
Because of the environment around it, it's small. Like, it doesn't feel like a big, expansive county ground. It feels like a smaller ground. The crowd will be better. Cork, obviously, are very much having a Cork season, aren't they? Like, there's so much good, and yet we don't really know. Is there anything? Is there really solid foundations that are going to stand up come a big game or a big moment? We just don't know, and that really has been Cork for a long number of years. Donegal, on the other hand, their transformation this year is, like, we all were sort of fascinated to see what McGuinness would bring, what McGuinness Mark II would bring. It hasn't brought a massive difference tactically, which I suppose is a wee bit disappointing, but from their performance level, It is stunning. Like, they went from what, an 8-point loss to Tyrone last year to an 8-point win this year, and completely dominated Tyrone in that game. This game's interesting for them because throughout they've been at such a peak. The Derry game, the Tyrone game, the Armagh game to take them through Ulster, and then Tyrone again. Like, just four huge, huge games in a row, and now Cork. So that's very much one that psychologically that team would be inclined to think we should be okay here. And that brings a slightly different level. Now, they can't remain at the peak all the time. So I think Donegal will drop a wee bit in terms of their focus and their intensity, the big away trip and everything else. And all of that does create a potential for an upset here. but it's what Cork would have to bring something very, very special. And can they definitely break down blanket defences the way Donegal will set up? We don't know, and I wouldn't be so sure.
Mm. Well, they let it get away from them in the league game, Mick, early in the year. It was the first game out, big talk around Jim McGuinness coming back and everything. But Cork let it go early. I'm sure they'll have learned an awful lot of lessons. But like as Enda says, they're a completely different team than they were in the league. I think that they've improved massively over the last couple of weeks.
Donegal, is it?
No, Cork.
Cork, sorry. I mean
Donegal too, sorry, well, have improved significantly. But I think Cork, just if you take that first round league performance versus where you saw them in the Munster Championship and even last weekend, I think they're a different team.
Yeah, they're no doubt they're improved. I mean, they didn't actually, as you said, that game got away from them against Donegal. They didn't actually play that badly. I don't, as I recall, for the rest of the match, they were all right.
Yeah.
But it kind of declare game, declare the last group game again. It was like a the season within a game. Mm-hmm. You know, started really, really well, dip, and then kind of hanging on at the end when there really was no need to be hanging on. So it's those, and this is the thing that's impacted Cork throughout the season, really, are these fade outs at different times of the game, not always the same time, but they happen, and that seems to be the thing. It's just that lack of consistency again in the big picture and in the small picture as well. Like, they've definitely, I mean, in terms of playing Donegal, some of the stuff they did against Clare is encouraging in terms of their tackling was excellent, their turnover was very, very good. There was a lovely description in one of the local newspapers of their attacking style that they had three or four players because they were trying to spread it wide, and he described it as a horseshoe attacking formation, which I kind of like. But you know, so they're trying different things, and they're getting a lot of the basics right. It's just that level of consistency. I mean, from the point of view of Donegal, I mean, Donegal have just been immensely impressive, and I mean, the Tyrone game really now was a kind of a, for me watching them, it was certainly a moment where you kind of went, yeah, okay, these guys,
they mean real business now. Yeah.
Like, you know, I thought Tyrone played quite well. I thought they were courageous in the way they went out about their business. They were physical. They did all the things you would hope them to do. But Donegal are just, you could just see the confidence of winning an Ulster title just flowing through. They look so comfortable in their own skin. They're all comfortable in what they're being asked to do. They look super fit. They're getting up and down the park, no problem. They're adhering to this, you know, a really punishing style of play, but it's working for them. And I do think going down to Cork, yeah, there will be an element of this is a possible banana skin, but Donegal just strike me as a type of team that will just kind of roll over that banana skin, you know what I mean? They will embrace your banana skin. Embrace it.
But eat it remorselessly.
And eat it remorselessly. Yes, there's no banana within this skin, but I'm still going to eat it. Like, that's the way they... That's the vibe you're getting off them.
Yeah.
And I just think... I mean, look, I think for Cork to get anything out of it, they're going to have to absolutely, you know, eradicate those dips in the game, be very consistent. I think it could be a very good match, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a spectacle. I think both teams will, you know, okay, they'll both be sitting back, but on the counter, they're both very effective on the counter. I mean, Cork still, I mean, for all, I mean, they're trying to kick it a bit more as well, but they're still, their runners are really effective when they do hit top speed and they're moving downfield. That's their strength. And Donegal the same, really. So, I mean, it could be good, but I just think Donegal at the moment is just operating at a higher level. But we'll see. It'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting, Rory, because it's actually what Cork can take out of this going into the Tyrone game as well. That's probably as big a sideshow of what might happen in this group. But also, I think for Donegal, if they are going to be genuine All-Ireland contenders, then this should not be treated as a banana skin. They should just go down, do a professional job, get in, get out of Cork, and just come out of it and move on to the next step. Because we all know Jim McGuinness talks about process, process, process. And this should just be another step on what they think is going to be a very long journey, if they are the contenders we all think they are.
And I think they will. I think that's exactly what they will do, unfortunately, from a Cork perspective. Donegal are the story of the football championship so far. I think that, for me anyway, that's, they have been a revelation. They, like, led by a manager that's as charismatic as he is. They have, Michael mentioned there about the levels of fitness. I mean, it's, you know, it's chalk and cheese. Now, they have gotten some players back from last year, but they are like a different team completely to what we saw last year. the togetherness, the spirit that's there, the way they played. He will pick a team. No, look, the team will pick itself. But I mean, if you were picking Footballer of the Year, would Patter Morgan be the front runner?
He wouldn't be far off, would he?
He would, you know. And then you have such a spread up front in terms of that. Actually, Patter Morgan is a really interesting selection and tactical dilemma for John Cleary and Kevin Walsh, because you definitely have to pick somebody to put a do some class of a job on him. But like the spread of scores and the fact that they can shoot from range, like the chances are, if you sit off Donegal, sure, they'll just kick points from distance because they've incredible kickers from out the field. And Cork have been playing a slightly more defensive game. They have been giving up kickouts by and large. I think it could be a tough one for them now. The only thing that you might have is the unfamiliarity of Parky Ring, which is, you know, worth something because, look, it's an odd place insofar as it is a tight pitch.
It's the only ground in the country, Rory, I'd say, with a rockery in the corner, isn't it?
Yeah. It's an unusual county ground. I mean, look, we all know it's a former soccer pitch. It was formerly known the Flower Lodge. So the pitch itself is quite small. The capacity will be tight. There should be a good crowd. It'd be interesting to see how many Donegal come down. I'm surprised, given the buzz that Jim McGuinness has created around Donegal, it's not being picked up by TV, either GA Go or RT. It would have been one that I would have been very interested to see. Now, obviously, I've got a parochial interest there, but I just think Donegal are coming like a train, and I'm not entirely sure Cork will have the requisite tools to stop that train on Saturday.
Yep, I think you could be right. Last game of the weekend then for us to look at in Group 4, you've got Kerry and Louth on 2 points after wins against Monaghan and Meath. This Monaghan-Louth game now this weekend, Enda, has so much riding on it because it seems, even at this outset, that maybe this is the shootout for second place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's set up for, if we're talking about Cork being Cork, it's set up for Monaghan being Monaghan. Whenever they're being written off and their back's against the wall, they're a serious, serious proposition. And we know they can get brilliant performances out of themselves. And they'll not fear Louth. Louth won't fear them either. Louth are in a... Jer Brennan's work with Louth, the season that they're putting together at the minute is really, really superb. But Monaghan will see it as a real chance to get some semblance of respect. They're playing for respect. That was a really hurtful loss down in Kerry. Just the manner of the defeat, not so much losing heavily to Kerry, but the manner of them, the fact that they, as Vinnie Corey himself sort of alluded to afterwards, they just missed the core ingredients that pretty much you consistently expect from a Monaghan team. So certainly Monaghan very much coming out with that sort of last stand, that real fight, that sort of shout back demand of respect that we expect from them. But Louth are a serious team at the minute, full of confidence, scoring goals for fun. Like they really took me the part the last day out. Hugely credible performance against Dublin in the Leinster final, obviously, to cap off a really strong, just no drama Leinster campaign where they accounted for Kildare mid-route. So it's a big one for Vinnie Corey, this one, a really, really big one.
Is it a first championship meeting between the teams?
Is it?
Would you know, Michael? I have a feeling it might be.
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but you'd be going back into the dim and distant past when Monaghan were winning like 10 Ulsters in a row kind of thing, and maybe Louth might have picked off a Leinster, you know, way back in the 20s or the 30s, but I would say it's as probably is. Unless
yeah. I think it's a first ever championship meeting between the two sides, which adds another layer of interest, I would imagine.
I think if you're looking at ways, and you know, part of the commentary around the football championship so far has been how drab it has felt, whatever about the games, or how drab it's felt and kind of how slow burning it is. Like, this game is the absolute epitome of what's, if there's anything good about the group stages, this is it, right? This is the equivalent. Like, if I was like, you know, if I rule the world and you could pick what games are on TV, this is a game I would absolutely have put on terrestrial TV. Like, this is your FA Cup first, second, third round game that you absolutely drive it. Like, because you've got, if you take Kerry out of that group, right, you've got Meath, Monaghan, Louth, it's a little local cauldron there. Monaghan, Louth, right, really close to each other. They don't play very often, but they're both coming in, as Enda just outlined there, with it's a huge game for them. I mean, for Loud, I mean, beating Meath was probably, I mean, I'll defer to anyone from Loud, but obviously, but I would have thought that that was probably their biggest win since the All-Ireland in 57. Mm. Right? That, like, it was that big. And now they're coming into their next game against the crowd over the road that they can absolutely believe they can win. And as you say, it could put them second in the group. It's, if there's anything good about this system, it's all in this game. You know, the local aspect, the you know, a kind of a rivalry that doesn't exist, but it could exist if they played more often because they're right next to each other. And you've got Loud on the crest of a wave, Monaghan bouncing off the ropes after such a demoralising performance. You really hope and pray that they come with that kind of traditional Monaghan reaction that you would expect of, certainly over the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, this could end up being a terrific, terrific match. But it's kind of been shoved away to the into the background. I mean, I don't understand why anybody's getting excited about Kerry Meath at all.
No.
Compared to this game anyway. I don't understand that at all.
Mm. Because actually, it's funny, Rory, you said that Donegal are the story of the championship, but actually Loud have definitely been one of the stories.
Loud give them a run for their money
as well.
Big time.
Yeah. Like I think Loud, in fairness, if you look at the job, everybody praised Mickey Hart rightly for what he did with them, but Ger Brennan has added another layer to this team and what they're doing, and I actually think they'll feel no fear against Monaghan. And in fairness, even the Kerry game, I think Loud are just, they're riding on the crest of a wave. I think Mick is absolutely right. Whatever happens this weekend, the trajectory that they're on is going one way.
Their only championship defeat was against the All-Ireland champions, which they lost by three or four
six points.
Was it okay? It was a six in the end, which was maybe a little bit harsh in the overall scheme of things. Scoring goals for fun. And what I like about them is they're winning, they're going into matches and people are saying, look, they're on the crest of a wave, they should be winning this. And then they go out and win it. You know, that doesn't always happen for a team that's, you know, sort of developing and coming from what you might consider a sort of a mid-ranking tier, and they can sometimes struggle when expectation comes on because there might be a new level of profile attached to whatever success they've achieved. But I think the way they're handling all of that, I think similarly now this weekend, but like, I'd be worried about Monaghan, Jackie. I mean, if you look at the two matches so far, they're two top scorers. Conor McManus, who, let's be honest, has definitely got more road behind him than ahead. And Rory Beggin. And that's bought with 4 points each. And meanwhile, Sam Mulroy, 3.23. Now, I know you could probably argue in Leinster, a different class of opposition, and that's fine. But still racking up big scores. They're very well organised. I'm fascinated by this fixture as well. I think this is a great... I think Mick's analogy there of an old school third round FA Cup tie and the sort of novelty aspect to it and the neighbours and the rivals and the fact that they don't meet all that often. I think this is a great tie to look forward to over the weekend. And I think Louth will win.
Mm. Last word to you then, Enda, on the football, because I know you're going to Celtic Park this weekend, which, you know, as we said earlier, seems like the game of the weekend. It's just a pity there's eight of them to try to be keeping your eyes on. That's the difficulty this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It just feels, we were talking off air beforehand, it just still feels, and I know it's a boring topic to keep coming back to, but we're so used in the GA to have a natural storyline that rises towards the peak of our All-Ireland finals in the summer. And so many times in the course of a year, we're now faced with that conversation of, right, well, the big stuff is starting now, and then several months or several weeks later, the big stuff is starting now. So we get the McKenna Cup, which is a big thing up here, the way we're in the National League. Okay, this is the National League. This is the big one. This is the best competition. National League goes, we immediately build up this is the championship now. This is provincial championships. These are massive. We build up there, and we got some cracking provincial finals this year. And then we get into, as Jack O'Connor says, we get into the real football now, whenever the round robin stage, and the round robin sort of stage goes. And I think for everybody, we're not quite fully there yet in terms of them. Last year, we obviously got an amazing last round of it. And then whenever these finish up, whenever we get the preliminary round, even we're already starting to say it now, whenever we hit the preliminary, then the real football will start. So how many false starts in a year can you have? And I done a wee article, and it's like a wee mid-season doldrum. And there's great gems of matches, great performances, great things. But it just feels, it's tough to get up for them because there's so much happening, and you lose that real focus on the big games that are there. But as I say, that one Celtic Park that I'm going to, I can't wait for it. I think it's fascinating. Low, their story of the summer, Donegal's story of the summer, Galway's rekindling. There's plenty there in the Football Championship. Mayo, are they going to catch fire? So there is lots there in the Football Championship. Like, and even Armagh, they, if they beat Derry, which is certainly conceivable, they'll not fear Galway. They could finish top in that group. Low, they're probably on a trajectory now. If they take Monaghan out, they're probably looking, they're not going to win the All-Ireland this year, but they're probably looking where we are heading for Division One. That's their ambition, and you would be hard to argue against that. So there is brilliant stories there, much to interest us, but it just seems to be lost in the churn a wee bit until we get to the real football.
I think the little problem for the group stages compared to last year. And we had a great last day last year. I think people forget that. The last day was fabulous. And it was very good partly because it was a couple of surprises in the first round of games. Yeah. We didn't get any surprises in the first round of games this time around. So now people are like, oh, sure, look at the top two was nearly already sorted. And then it really is down to one game. Like Cork Clare was the deciding game for third place, apparently. And so on and so forth. Monaghan Low is a big game now for similar reasons, whatever. But like, if there's any few shocks at all this weekend, or even not even shocks, just small surprises here and there just to change it around, you'll have a much different complexion and a much different conversation going into the final round of games. Like, I think I was on this show last year, and you might have been on it as well. And we were saying, like, that year one, you can't decide it in year one. Year two, decisions seem to be being made now already about what year three is going to look like. But I would still be of the view that you just take it as an experiment and just see, you know, just see. Because the whole idea that, like, the intentions are good to avoid dead rubbers and so on and so forth. And I appreciate that the games are flat. What I find a lot of times now is that people are still fascinated by the results in these matches, but they're not inclined to watch the things. Which I think is more...
That's a bit of an indictment.
That doesn't say much for Gaelic football,
but
though.
That's my point. That's my point. And I know we're getting off into another horrendous rabbit hole here, but, like... it's not so much the structure is only one part of it. It's the game you're playing. Like, if the games are entertaining, more entertaining to more people, well, then you might have different conversations around the matches as well. But anyway, look, I'm going to walk away from that burning bin of rubbish and just leave it smolder away.
In classic broadcasting terms, we'll come back to that one.
We'll come back to that.
Enda, look, we'll leave the football there. Thanks a million for being with us, and enjoy Celtic Park.
Cheers, folks. See yous.
All right, then. Let's get stuck into the hurling then in our last few minutes. Under-20 hurling final on Saturday night. Let's not let the three Cork people on this call be bewildered about the goal that was not given. Tipperary against Offaly. And I think credit to Offaly, Michael, for what they've done over the last number of years. To be in their third consecutive under 20 final is some going. The talent that they have there, I mean, the wave is coming. It's just as a case of when and how they nurture this talent. But I just think, even first and foremost, being here is just so significant for this county, and a sellout as well. Like, they are buying into this big time.
That's great. Like, it's a callback to the 80s, really, when you see loads of Offaly underage teams coming to All-Ireland finals and winning them, or being at the very, very least being competitive. So that's great. Like, and it's, you know, I mean, you need, hurling needs so many counties to be strong, but it particularly needs the likes of Offaly bridging that gap between the traditional counties and the ones that are aspiring to be Offaly, and to show them that it's possible. But this under 20 final, it just makes me feel small again, or young again, like, because I remember when Tip Offaly have only ever played once before in All-Ireland 21 final. That was 1989, and the comparisons is gas, like, because back then in 89, it was over 30,000 turned up to Port Leash. Now, that was a time when I'm not sure was there even tickets involved, because it would have been a walk up. But I remember it very well, because, like, the traffic, like, the game was delayed by 10 minutes anyway, because of the traffic outside and getting the crowd. And there was cars parked miles from Port Leash for that game. It was the week after, it was in September. So it was the week after Tip had won the senior All-Ireland. So there was a big push from Tipperary. And Offaly had won the minor All-Ireland the previous weekend. But before we came on, I just had a look at the teams from 89. That, I mean, prepare to be nostalgic in a very big way. Like, I mean, these names are just unbelievable. I mean, the tip team, that 1989 under-21 tip team included Liam Sheedy, Michael Ryan, George Friend, John Madden, Conal Bonner, John Lahey, Declan Ryan, Conor Stakelam, who played in the following year's Munster final. I mean, they all went on to amazing careers. But the Offaly team, I mean, brace yourself. You'd John Troy, who, by the way, had won his third All-Ireland Minor medal the previous Sunday. He was in goals for Offaly in the under-21s. But you had Brian Whelan, Roy Mannion, Brendan Kelly, Johnny Pilkington, Billy Dooley, Dahi Regan, Johnny Dooley, Declan Pilkington, Michael Deignan.
That's an unbelievable success rate. Get all of them to go and play senior hurling and to have the careers that they had then afterwards as well. That's extraordinary,
Here's the thing. People knew, even when they were under 21s, people knew that these were two special teams coming up against each other.
Right.
And it was a fabulous game. Like, Tip won by a couple of points. Dan Quirk, who'd be a father to Dylan Quirk, God rest him, scored a hat-trick. He scored 3-2 that day to effectively win the game for Tip. But I mean, you know, you had like Conal Bonner, John Lahey, and Declan Ryan had won senior medals the previous weekend for Tip. It was a different world now to what we're looking at. But the interest that was there, and they had also actually, you know what I think of it, they had also played in the All Ireland minor final in 1987, the same way the Tip Offaly played a minor final in recent years as well. They had that, and I suppose the odd thing going forward is that Tip Offaly didn't really play that much in the '90s then as senior teams. They didn't meet each other in All-Ireland semi-finals or finals or anything like that. It was kind of this little moment that they had with two underage teams playing each other, similar to now. We'll see. We could be looking back at these teams. Please God, we will be looking back at these teams and picking out 7-8 great, great players on both sides who went on to mighty things with the seniors, you know?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of generational players. I mean, who knows what Adam Screeny is going to become? But I think even just watching him as of now, Rory, for people to be able to witness this guy from a small age all the way through, he's going to be a special, special talent. And I think they're going to get a treat this weekend.
Yeah, and he's not at the Clifford levels yet, but he's certainly heading that direction in terms of the sheer skills that he's able to bring to the table. He's just an incredible player. But I think you mentioned a point at the very, very beginning, Jackie, in relation to the fact that this is their third under-20 final in a row. I think that's absolutely essential. Look, I mean, people will say that, like, if you look at Cork being the next nearest example for that success rate in terms of getting to these finals, getting to the finals and competing at this level is so important. And that has started to make its way through into the senior team from a Cork perspective. And I have no doubt over the next couple of years, despite what happens at the weekend in relation to the result, I'd no doubt that Offaly will definitely get a bounce and a twist out of this. And you would hope that you would see them back competing in the Leinster Championship and right up there, because Mick is right. You need, like, you know, people throw these out as old tropes and cliches, or you need the Offalys and you need the Wexfords, but you do. You really do need these counties to be coming in there to make it that, to put that little bit of diversity into it. And there's a mercurial nature to Offaly hurling that just, I think, for, like, they were my favourite. There was many teams in that 90s period that, you know, were so attractive to watch for a variety of reasons. And we all remember Loughnane and obviously Dalo and the Clare team. But the Offaly team of the 90s were, I loved them. I just thought they just played a type of hurling that you just couldn't get a handle on it. The skill levels that they were able to bring. Obviously, the next steps now, there's the whole world of difference now in terms of the physical conditioning that's required. And young Adam is probably going to have to be eating lots of pasta and lots of steak over the next year or two. But I think this weekend will be special. I mean, the fact that I think the Eamon Horan's report was class last night. They broke the internet.
Yeah.
And like Tipperary, no better crowd to tell you about how hard it is to bring under 20s as well. Like, they won the last All-Ireland under 21 title and won the first under 20 title in 1819. They beat Cork both times. You look at that generation is now the core of the senior team, and you can see the difficulties that they're having just getting it together in a consistent way. So it's very hard. The one thing that often you do have in their favour, and Rory, you're right, like, I mean, it's a completely different landscape we live in now, but awfully traditionally have been absolutely brilliant at wringing the very last drop out of every good underage team. Now, the names I reeled off there, there's some, not just generational players there, there's some of the greatest hurlers ever to play the game included in that group. So that's, you know, that's exceptional. But they do have a very good record of getting the most from a little. So please God, that tradition will kick in again now, and they'll drive on whatever way to go. Again, whatever way the result goes, kind of from a neutral point of view, it doesn't really matter. You're looking for performance. You're looking for guys who can move on. This is the whole point of making it, you know, under 17s and under 20s. It's really, really more of a developmental grade now rather than we're going for the medal. Now it's huge for the players who are involved in the management. So obviously, don't get me wrong, but in a bigger picture scene, you're looking at who can have a long senior career here.
And there was a very controversial finish to the minor final between the two counties, as we know, a couple of years ago. So that could add a little bit of extra spice to the whole thing.
It's Tip-Offaly. The one thing about that great 90s team, they had an incredibly serrated edge as well, physically, when they wanted to. They could play it any which way you wanted, right? And that's a tradition in Offaly hurling, the same Tipperary hurling. And they share a border. They don't meet very often, but when they do, it can be spicy. So, and we, as you say, with the history from the minor final, it'll be. I can see why Nolan. I wasn't surprised when Nolan Park just, you know, sold out in a heartbeat.
Which is an unbelievable story in itself, lads, you'd have to say. Like, even Michael Deignan's coming out and saying, oh, you know, we got it wrong. We're trying to do this. We're trying to do that. At under 20s level, you never see that level of demand.
You don't expect it, Jackie. Really?
And I think they didn't either, to be fair.
Well, it shows you, like, when you are Offaly and you've been so far from an All-Ireland final, from an eighth All-Ireland final, you know, and when you're back there again, like, I mean, it just shows you, like, there is a dormant tradition, appetite, population there waiting to go to. Give us something to go to, you know, give us something that we can hang on to and get behind here. And they have that team now. And Tip sent back. I mean, this goes back. I heard Shane McGrath, was it last week? It would have been last week.
Yeah.
Talking just about the public supporters. Interest in hurling and Tip and the supporters and all that. I mean, they sent back tickets for this game. So, like, again, you've got two sides of a coin here. You've got Offaly just on the crest of a wave and Tip kind of wondering, you know.
That's very disappointing, Mick, to hear that. Like, that's
the point. I was surprised to hear it because it's not a huge capacity in Nolan Park. I mean, it was a good call by the GA to have it in Nolan Park for historical reasons as well, to have it there this year. It would have worked any other year. 27,000 would have been fine for the 20 final. But I was surprised as well, the Tip didn't take up the full allocation, you know.
Well, I hope Bruce Springsteen's marks have been taken away, because the pitch was definitely in need of a bit of TLC after all that as well. Lads, we'll leave it there, but looking forward to a cracking weekend. Mick, thanks a million for being with us. And myself and Rory will be back next week. More crack on the way, and we'll chat to you then.
GAA podcast on RTE.ie, sponsored by Optimum Nutrition. No matter your goal, if you're putting it in, we'll help you get more out. Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the Gaelic Players Association.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. It's over the bar.